that by the age of three, most humans can form simple sentences. That those little babies, when they're born, learn and discover what language is because of the adults, the older people, even their siblings or the children in their life, begin to form in them this concept of language. And so babies, right off the bat, right after they're born, are beginning to learn language, how to speak, how to communicate. And they grow in that. First, they start saying simple words, right? Like, it's always dada, isn't it? It's always dada. And then it's ball. And then it's cat. And then it's mom, you know, because that's just how they do it. So they learn single words, and then they are eventually able to know that there are concepts that put these words together, so that by the age of three, a human, a little human, can say very simple sentences. And then after that, it keeps growing. It was when I was a freshman in my English class that I suppose I began to grow in my understanding that sentence structure and form are the things that I have been living in. And then I discovered in that freshman English class that English is a very, very complicated language. It's like learning about what you already know how to do. I knew how to speak in English. I knew how to create a sentence because it was modeled for me again and again and again. But when I was in the process of learning these things, when I was in the process of putting names to these things that were previously just a way of doing and being in my life, speaking and hearing, when I started to actually discover the form, give it some concrete evidence, everything became kind of a jumbled bit of confusion for me. I'm still not quite sure if I can identify an adverb or a conjunction or an adjective or a preposition in a sentence. I actually did research this week to try and figure out if I could do it. I can't. And so if you are an English teacher or you were an English major or you know, would you come help a girl out? That'd be great. I've been wondering if this vision of following the simple way of Jesus has become for you and me like learning about sentence structure and form. You see, for some of us, we have been so immersed in doing and being in this manner of faith that when we begin to put names and language to this thing that we are so used to, it really confuses us. And for more of us, we are just beginning our journeys of faith for the first time. We're coming to know and love Jesus with fresh eyes and hearts and lives. And the language that we are putting to this journey could actually be a help to us. It's as though someone is walking along just talking to us and we're hearing it for the first time and it all makes sense. Either way, whenever we parse out things like this, it could be the cause for more confusion than clarity. And if this is you, please know that you are not alone in your bewilderment. You are bewildered because the mystery of God is ever unfolding. You are befuddled because the fullness of the ways of God are never, ever fully known and can never be fully known. And when we talk about following the simple way of Jesus, we are talking about exactly that. As a church with its foundation in Jesus Christ, we want to be found following that simple way. The way a three-year-old comes to discover language. This means that we are in proximity to Jesus individually and that communally we are bringing the body, the ever-forming group of us, into proximity to Jesus. And as that proximity to Jesus changes us, it also changes the world. Certainly this is not simple. And I hesitate a lot, actually, to put any more words to this simple way of Jesus. It's because the actual following of Jesus is as diverse and varied as each of us are. Each of us have our own simple way of following Jesus. And together, we do that in a simple way. We believe that this mission statement is specifically not following the right way of Jesus or following this specific way of Jesus. No, we are following the simple way. Today we look at one of the ways that we follow the simple way of Jesus through intentional community. And Luke 5 is our focus for these 3 weeks that we've been in this series. So if you have a Bible or you need a Bible, they're in the pew in front of you, behind you, chairs, they're in there somewhere. It's a little bit of a treasure hunt, but once you find it, you will know. So we've been hanging out in Luke chapter 5, and we will we'll look at the story of Jesus healing the paralyzed man. We're going to start Luke 5, starting in verse 17. Everyone's there? I hear pages. It's one of my favorite sounds in Sunday morning worship. That and laughter. Those are my two. Luke 5, verse 17. One day, Jesus was teaching, and Pharisees and teachers of the law were sitting there. They had come from every village in Galilee and from Judea and Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was with Jesus to heal the sick. Some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat and tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus. When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and lowered him on his mat through the tiles into the middle of the crowd, right in front of Jesus. When Jesus saw their faith, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." Pharisees and the teachers of the law began thinking to themselves, "Who is this fellow who speaks blasphemy? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" Jesus knew what they were thinking and asked, "Why are you thinking these things in your heart? Which is easier to say, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or to say, 'Get up and walk'? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins." So he said to the paralyzed man, "I tell you, get up, take your mat, and go home." Immediately he stood up in front of them, took what he had been lying on, and went home praising God. Everyone was amazed and gave praise to God. They were filled with awe and said, "We have seen remarkable things today." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Today I want to focus on the unintentional crowd and the intentional community. You see, there's a movement here, a trajectory in the way that Jesus draws people in from an unintentional crowd to an intentional community. You may notice when at first read that there is an unintentional crowd around Jesus. I appreciate the nuance that Luke here includes, that the religious elite, these Pharisees and teachers of the law, had gathered around, but they were just happened to be sitting there right where Jesus was. That's probably not true. They were probably seeking Jesus out. But Luke is painting a picture here. These people were just happened to be right there near Jesus. Other people were around Jesus. They were probably drawn in by what he was saying, or they just noticed that there was some commotion happening in the home, and they decided to stick around and see what was happening. Perhaps it was their entertainment for the afternoon. Either way, this crowd didn't gather intentionally. Something was calling for their attention, and they wanted to notice. Being a part of this crowd didn't require much from the members, just a simple glance and maybe a few shuffles over just to see what was happening with Jesus. I think we like being a part of a crowd. Especially these days where we haven't been a part of crowds for like 18 months, or maybe if you're a little hermit crab, you know, like 3 years. If you've never been in a crowd for very long, it feels so good to be back with people, right? There's something exciting and energizing and compelling about a large group of people. I do wonder if this is true for extroverts and introverts. Is it true, introverts? Is it okay to be, okay, it's okay to be a part of a crowd? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, not for very long. You have your moments and then you gotta go. That's fine. That's fine. God made you that way. Yeah. Yeah, just talk to her. Okay. So even for introverts, being in a crowd, there's something about it. Okay? For extroverts, there's really something about it. But even for introverts, there's something about being a part of a crowd. Because in a crowd, you can feed off of the energy of others. There's frequently something to see, something to notice, something to be distracted by. You see, Jesus' presence in that town is causing the townspeople and the religious elite to check out what's going on. There's something to see. There's something to hear. There's something to notice. And for very right reason, because Jesus is there, and we will know as we keep reading all the Gospels, specifically Luke, that there is something remarkable about Jesus. Here we have an unintentional crowd. And then there's the intentional crowd. If you're taking notes, you can put unintentional crowd and then the intentional crowd. This crowd has come together for a purpose. You see, they've purchased the tickets. They've set the date in their calendar. They've made plans. They've promoted the gathering. Maybe they've even done some of the work to make the gathering of a crowd possible. And certainly this crowd has a reason for being in the place that they are. We can imagine that there are others gathered around Jesus who have been with him for a little bit, following him from town to town. Surely the disciples that Jesus called just a few verses ahead in Luke 5, they were with him. And then there were probably even others who were catching on, who were intentionally following Jesus or seeking Jesus out. They gave of more than just a notice, but perhaps their time, their energy, their calendar, their plans. These members of the intentional crowd have invested something of their lives with Jesus. They share a common value in what Jesus is saying to them. Even if they don't understand it, they value it. And they are compelled by the points that Jesus is making. I think that church can be often an intentional crowd. A group of people gathered because of common faith or values or moral or theological ideas. It's common for churches these days to gather up people to come together on a Sunday morning because they like Jesus and because they like the worship music or the preaching or the kids programming or the initiatives that reach out into the community. Perhaps they have friends in the crowd or a place to serve in the crowd. Perhaps there's a sense of a belonging and purpose in the crowd, and it feels good to be a part of that crowd. Intentional crowds can be a gift. They draw people in. They get people involved. They move people towards something. But intentional crowds are not the end goal of the Christian life. Jesus is always calling us to intentional community. Intentional community is modeled by this group of friends that bring their paralyzed friend to Jesus. Through the unintentional crowd, even through the intentional crowd, they make a way to get close enough to Jesus. Close enough that Jesus might heal their friend and restore all of them in the process. Here we have a group of people carrying a man on a mat. Now we can imagine that it took four people to carry this man, one holding each corner. By the way, Scripture doesn't tell us how many people it was that were carrying this man. It could have been two. That would be kind of crazy, but it could have been two. But let's just say, for the sake of the story, it was a handful of people. A handful of people get word that Jesus is nearby. Perhaps they had been a part of an intentional crowd around Jesus before this moment. They must have known that what Jesus could do, that Jesus could heal people. And so they make every effort to get their friend to Jesus. Now this friend. This friend has been paralyzed for a long time. Without the use of his legs, he could not work and provide for his family. He could not participate in religious services and gatherings. Special accommodations were always having to be made for him anytime he wanted to participate in anything. We can imagine that not only did he feel useless to those he loved and to society, but that he also felt that he was a burden to his friends and family. He relied on his community for everything, and his community bore the burden of his ailments. But this community sought something for this man that he could never get on his own. He could never get to Jesus on his own. He could never even join the unintentional crowd on his own. His community, his friends, they bore the burden of this man's useless legs all the way into proximity to Jesus. When Jesus notices what is happening, he responds quite specifically. You can imagine the scene. Perhaps if you were there, it'd be kind of surprising, right? All these people around Jesus, they're all kind of pressing close, this intentional crowd, and then probably behind them is the unintentional crowd. And all of a sudden, Jesus notices like chunks falling on him. This is kind of a mess. And he can tell that something is happening above him. And then he looks up and notices, there's a hole in the ceiling. And there, after a while, I'm sure, because you have to make the hole big enough to put a whole human through, a person comes down on a mat. I can imagine that Jesus isn't just continuing to teach. Like, he took his time to watch what was happening. It also doesn't say that Jesus got through and was, like, helping them break through the roof. No, Jesus just stood still and waited. Notice in verse 20, when the man is finally lowered in front of him, it says that Jesus saw their faith. That's a plural word there. Their faith. See, sentence structure. It's coming in handy. Their faith. Not the man's faith. Not the crowd's faith. He saw their faith. The friend's faith. This is intentional community. Intentional community carries others. If you're taking notes, you can write that down. Intentional community carries others. When we find ourselves in this kind of community, we notice ourselves taking turns being carried and carrying. There are times when individuals' bodies or minds or souls or even their faith is paralyzed. They are unable to function as they hoped they could. Situations or circumstances have left them incapable of living their fullest self. Perhaps you have experienced, or maybe you are experiencing right now, a time when even a part of yourself is paralyzed, unable to function as you would hope it could. When these seasons of paralysis hit, it is the work, it is the joyful work of an intentional community to carry that person towards Jesus. It also takes a willingness to be carried. No one wants to be the one that is carried, but it is precisely those who have been carried, who've experienced being cared for in a community, who have known this even in their bones, that long to be a part of a community like this and look forward to taking their turn to carry. Intentional community carries others, and intentional community breaks through barriers. And and they specifically break through barriers to Jesus. When it seems as though there is something in the way, an intentional community dismantles the obstacles that hinder the way to Jesus. This is why we pursue justice and mercy, because justice is the breaking through of barriers to God and to life and to flourishing, and mercy is tending to the needs of those who cannot break through those barriers on their own. Sometimes, like we see here, it's the crowd that becomes the barrier to Jesus. That unintentional crowd and that intentional crowd meant that this man could not be healed. I have wondered if the church acts more like a crowd than a community. And I have wondered, then, can the church be a barrier to Jesus sometimes? Intentional community carries others. Intentional community breaks through barriers to Jesus. And intentional community is always pursuing healing. This means that we are always assessing our sick parts, being honest about them with people that we can trust, and continually evaluating our need for furthered health and wholeness. This also means that if we notice unhealth or paralyzed parts of our corporate body, meaning the church, our community, we bring those things to Jesus, and we tend to those things in the presence of Jesus, and we ask Jesus to heal these things. What's so remarkable about the account here is that Jesus first forgives the paralyzed man and then heals him. First, he forgives the man in his heart, soul, spirit, and then he heals his body. We usually come to Jesus if we are in any need of healing, and we say, come heal me, and then I'll figure out the rest of it, right? Now, I don't need forgiveness, but would you just fix the problem? Here, we see that intentional community is first pursuing forgiveness, then healing. And that Jesus offers forgiveness than healing. And that Jesus offers forgiveness than healing. Wrapped up in all these things, carrying each other, breaking through barriers, pursuing healing and forgiveness, is the consistent movement toward Jesus. Because following the simple way of Jesus means that we are continually moving from an unintentional crowd to an intentional crowd to an intentional community. I wonder, if you were to objectively place this church on that trajectory, where would you put us? Would you say that we are an unintentional crowd, having just noticed Jesus? Would you say we're an intentional crowd, people who've given something, but not everything? Or would you say we're an intentional community, marked by carrying one another, breaking through barriers to Jesus, pursuing healing? Are there parts and pockets of us that are one thing and parts and pockets of us that are another thing? Can we very well have all these different situations in the midst of our body, being a crowd and a community? I think it's possible. And to answer this question doesn't imply a sense of doom for this congregation. Not at all. I just wonder for you, for us, what it might look like to take an honest assessment. Because this is what we want to hone in on during our time focusing on these three mission pillars. That movement towards Jesus, that proximity to Jesus, is what we are pursuing. There may be times that our church body functions more as an unintentional crowd than an intentional community. That crowd is still aware of Jesus. There may be people in our body with us here on Sunday morning, online, at youth group, on Wednesday nights, in Bible studies, even in community events. those we meet while we're walking our neighborhoods that are drawn in as an unintentional crowd. That's the first step. The next step is to find some intention within that crowd. The step after that is to find some intention within community. And you may notice, as you draw to Jesus, that healing is taking place, that forgiveness is becoming a regular part of your and our life together, that you're noticing barriers in the way for people to encounter Jesus, and you are discovering your unique gifts and abilities to break through those barriers, to carry people, to invite healing. So I wonder, could we assess our crowdness or our community-ness? How often would you say we are regularly carrying one another and being carried? Are we noticing the barriers that stand in the way of others? Are we those barriers? Are we consistently pursuing healing? Are we asking for forgiveness, and are we being forgiven? Are we honest about the hurt places in us? The places that we are paralyzed? The places that aren't working? The things that aren't working well? Jesus' proximity to the people gathered is what makes the difference between a crowd and a community and then a Christian community. Because people, hello? We got it, God. Yeah, okay. Notification. People can be gathered around things all the time, right? Maybe that was just a text letting us know we could be gathered around something. But only those who are truly gathered around and then toward Christ can be in Christian community. Certainly, we could be gathered around fancy things, cool music, flashy programming, glitzy new campaigns. We could be gathered together because we love hymns, or because we love Bible study, or because we love service projects or life groups. Instead of those things bringing us towards Christ, we make them synonymous with Christ, and it displaces our discipleship. But when those things become the center of our being, together, we are not a Christian community. We're a different kind of community. Here at Newport, we simply want to follow Jesus. And that is the most complex thing that we can do. Simply following Jesus means that we are pursuing proximity to Jesus, and we're doing that individually, we're doing that corporately, together, congregationally, and we're doing that beyond, out there. Meaning that out there, we are even trying to draw close to Jesus. That feels crazy. But it's true. Simply following Jesus means that we are consistently moving along with Jesus and towards Jesus. And so I wonder for you, for me, for us, where is Jesus in proximity to this community? I'd like to invite you and me into a time of reflection and response. If the Spirit calls for a response from you, there are two questions that will direct our time as we enter into this reflection. Where is Jesus in proximity to this community? Or a different way of asking, where is this community in proximity to Jesus? And then the next question, what simple change are we being invited to? I invite you to just take a moment to assess that. Perhaps a picture is coming to your mind. Perhaps a graph, an analysis of this is coming to your mind. I ask that you use the gifts that God has given you, the brain, the heart, the mind, the body, that God has given you to reflect on this. This is not just a mind thing. It's a whole body thing. Where is Jesus in proximity to this community? Or where is this community in proximity to Jesus? And then, what simple change are we being invited to? Let us go to Jesus with this question.